This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
This is the Mark Madden Unfiltered Podcast from the BetRivers Network.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Mark Madden Podcast on the BetRivers Podcast Network. Going to open up with my weekly top three today. It's the top three Penguins off-season jobs to do, besides hiring a general manager, which is taking a lot longer than I think we all thought it would. Number three, make a decision on Jake Guentzel. His contract's up after this coming season. You got to extend him or trade him. I would explore trading him and would make the deal if the return was right. Number two, get rid of bad players and bad contracts. You know the name, starting with Granlund. And you're going to have to give up some positive assets to get rid of negative assets. You might have to trade Granlund and say maybe a third-round pick for nothing just to get rid of Granlund and his cap hit. And if you can't do that, you got to buy him out. You'd eat some cap on that, but you wouldn't have Granlund. And the big thing is to not have Granlund. Number one, figure out the goaltending. I don't keep Jari. I do get somebody else. I don't know who. Maybe Varlamov. Maybe Samsonov. Maybe whoever off. I always wanted a Russian goaltender. We can pretend he's Vladislav Tretiak. But the price on Jari is going to be too high. And the Penguins have been disappointed too often by Jari, not least down the stretch run of last season. Now is when the Penguins' offseason gets exciting. The minute the new GM gets hired, and on July 1st when free agency hits. Hey, it beats the bejesus out of talking about the Steelers maybe using Warren and Najee in the same backfield like Franco and Rocky. And they're talking about that, and if they do that, it'll show how out of touch they are with the offensive side of today's football. But right now I'm joined by my co-host, Tom Offerman. Tom, what would you do at goalie? Because I don't trust Jari at the price and length he's going to get somewhere.
Yeah, the reported price and length that he wants makes me balk at him. If he were to come back on a one-year prove-it deal, two-year deal maybe, that's very team-friendly, then I'd give it another shot with Jari. There's just no way you could pay the term and the money that he wants for a guy that has screwed the pooch for you and can't stay healthy.
Five injuries inside of a calendar year.
Yes.
As of when last season ended. Like, I would go as high as 2 years, $4 million per for Jari. That would be my absolute ceiling. And I bet you could get Varlamov for that.
No, I think you could too. And again, Varlamov isn't like some incredible downgrade from Tristan Jarry.
No, he's ham and egg. He's an established professional.
It's not like you're sacrificing, you know, goaltending just because you can't trust Jarry.
He's 35, but you're just playing for right now anyway with Sid and Gino and Tanger. So,
well, look at all the bridge goalies that are working out around the NHL too. You know what I mean? Just journeymen that, you know, catch on somewhere and have a nice little run.
That's because there's not many good goalies. Like even Samsonov in Toronto, they didn't go as far as they'd like in the playoffs, but he was their number one goalie.
Yeah, no question about it. I do think the Penguins are going to bring Jari back, though. I think they like...
I don't know. I mean, I want to see who the GM is.
Okay, that's fair.
If it's Dubas and they bring Jari back at too big a price and for too long, then we'll already know the coach has undue influence.
Yeah, and you know a lot more than I would, but it just feels like the team believes in Jari a lot more than people outside of the team believe in Jari.
They just don't want the happy locker room to be disturbed or changed at all.
But what has Jari ever done for you? That's a guy that you should want out of your locker room after what happened in the Islanders staying healthy for the Rangers
game
series.
Game 5 in 2021, specifically against the Islanders. Well, you know what? He's been hurt so often, it is his fault. And I'm beginning to wonder if he's soft mentally and physically, and if all those injuries don't tie the two together. But I said when he blew the Islanders series in 2021, I would have never brought him back because the locker room, the fans... You know, he could never be trusted again, but apparently I'm the only one who doesn't trust him.
Yeah, apparently, and he did have a great season after that debacle against the Islanders. Then we get to 2 weeks before the playoffs start, boom, injury, can't play against the Rangers. So his availability, I think, is at the top of the list that concerns me the most. You can talk about the potential that he's shown when he's healthy, and he's still relatively young for a goalie, that he could still find his stride in the NHL. He can't stay healthy, and that's the bottom line.
What would you do with Guentzel? He's an excellent player, a good fit on Sid's line. He has a 12-team, can't-trade-me-to clause, but that makes him among the more tradable.
I think you should explore trading Guentzel. I think you're absolutely right about that. It's a perfect shakeup for the team. And, you know, I don't want to word this like I'm excited at the possibility of trading Guentzel.
Right.
Like you said, you don't want to run him out of town.
I'm not trying to run him off, yeah.
But it is a little bit, you know, intriguing to see what's out there, to put that fishing rod in the water and see if you get a big bite. Maybe someone overpays for Guentzel. Maybe Minnesota's desperate and gives you too much for a Jake Guentzel because they're trying to get over that hump. I don't know. So I would definitely try to see what you could get for him. But if you come through this offseason, whoever the new GM is, and you don't like any of the deals that you got back, you kind of have to extend him then, right? You're kind of stuck.
If you don't trade him, you got to extend him. You're down to one or the other in the current offseason. Now, like I said before, and it's what people don't get and won't like, to clean up the mess Hextall left, you might have to do stuff,
yeah.
Trade a third-round pick or more with Granlund just to get another team to take Granlund. I'm not sure what gets done to make the team a lot better this year. Although I researched the buyout procedure. If they buy him out, they gain $4.1 million in cap space this year.
Wow,
that's a lot. But then they have for the next 3 years after that, they have I think it's 1.8 something dead cap space per year.
Well, that's
a later
problem.
Maybe the cap goes up. And, you know, it's going to go up like a million this year. It stayed flat since the pandemic, but maybe you do get some help down the road. But I know that Granlund can't come back.
See, if I was the new GM, that would be a future me problem, the dead cap space in the next couple of years. And I'd focus more on the 4.1 that I'd free up this year. Because you're right, the mindset kind of, you have to decide what the mindset is, future or win now. And I think it's going to be win now with whoever comes in.
Can't win now.
But it's going to be the mindset. Do you agree with that?
You can say it's win within the next 2 years. Or 3 years, but you can't say win now because it's impossible to win now with the mess that got left.
Well, then I was going to say that that $4.1 million cap space really helps you in the immediate, and I think that would be attractive for the Penguins and the core, honestly. Although, who cares what the core thinks?
One thing I wrote, they do. Well, maybe Dubas won't. One thing I wrote in my blog for the X website is that they need to stop spending to the cap. And one reason a lot of teams spend to the cap in any league that has a cap is because it's a show of good faith to the fans you're trying to win. But then you leave yourself no maneuverability at the deadline. I'd rather be, you know, $20 million under the cap and have maneuverability at the deadline. And then if you're not good enough, then you dump more cap. But you should leave yourself more flexibility than they have, certainly.
Just because you don't spend to the cap every year doesn't make you not operating good faith. Like you said, you can set yourself up for the future and go crazy in a free agency in the offseason, go crazy at a trade deadline. Operating good faith comes in when it's like 8 years in a row where you don't spend at the cap and you just keep rolling money over and over and over.
Well, right, when you're just, you know, eating profit
exactly.
From TV, but that's baseball and they don't have a cap.
But the strategy is definitely there to not spend at the cap for a year or two and then just go crazy on the extra cap space that you have.
One thing, too, that the new GM has to understand, I think the new GM will, this isn't a destination team anymore. You're not coming into play with Sid in his prime. You're coming into play with Sid still very good and everything else kind of fading.
Yeah, that's going to be so hard to attract free agents. Another reason why, you know, if you're a Varlamov, a goaltender, do you come to a Pittsburgh thinking that you can win, or do you go somewhere else thinking that I'm going to catch on with maybe a younger team that needs help at the goaltending position?
I think with Varlamov, you just go wherever you get the most money.
And it wouldn't be that steep for the Penguins.
Yeah, well, I mean, he made his cap hit with the Islanders. He had a four-year deal. The yearly cap hit was $5 million. I don't know if he's going to get that, but I bet he'd want to get four.
So you researched a lot of the buyout stuff. You can use two buyouts, right?
No, you can use as many as you want. The two buyouts thing was after the cap got installed, you could use compliance buyouts to get under the cap. But no, you can use as many as you want. And I believe the player gets 2/3 of his remaining contract's value paid to him right then and there.
Unless you're Jeff Carter, correct? If you're Jeff Carter,
you can't buy out a guy who's over 35. That's
years
right.
Old. He gets all the money.
You know what I'd do with him?
Just bench him, right? Just scratch him every time.
I'd do better than that. I would say, listen, you know, nobody wants you in a trade, and you wouldn't okay it anyway because you're over 35 and you have that right. And we can't buy you out because you're over 35. But what we can do is put you on waivers. And if you clear, you go to Wilkes.
Ooh.
And unless I miss my guess, this can be done, okay? And then you go to Wilkes, and you'll get your whole salary, and we'll get screwed by the cap hit, but you're going to ride the bus.
Which, for a guy who's got two Stanley Cup rings in his back pocket, probably should be looking at retirement right now. That might be the thing that pushes him over the
edge to
retire.
I'm not sure you can set, but I don't see why you couldn't.
Yeah, why couldn't you put him on waivers?
I mean, there shouldn't be anything, because Jeff Carter has a 35-plus contract, that means he has to be on the NHL roster. Maybe there is. I'm kind of talking out my backside here.
Well, even if he is on the NHL roster, there's certainly not a law that says you have to play him every game. I mean, you look around at these NHL playoffs. Do you see Patrick Hornquist out there?
Yeah, but Sullivan will play Carter every game.
That's what I mean, and it's so frustrating is that the veteran respect is just clearly Sullivan's biggest flaw in my mind now, which is the complete opposite of what he was like when he came into the league.
Are you surprised Dubas hasn't been hired by now?
Yeah, I'm a little worried that it's like going to happen while we're taping this podcast or something like that. But
well, I'm not doing the podcast over at any rate.
I thought for sure we were going to find out Monday morning, Memorial Day morning. He was going to call the Penguins, say, I've spent the weekend, you know, at some lake with my family, and I decided to take the job or not take the job.
Yeah, Dubas could take the job at Villarreal in Spain and be the Latino Ted Lasso, and we're not going to do this podcast over. That's for absolute certain. Okay, we got five guys. What do we got?
Today's five guys are five guys who refused to be eaten. So these five gentlemen went up toe-to-toe.
Refused to be eaten?
Yes, they went toe-to-toe with creatures in a movie, and they killed the creature as opposed to the creature killing them.
Well, you see right there, I mean, Cocaine Bear can't be on the list.
He's not on the list. The bear won.
But the bear didn't eat the baby faces, which was the mother and the two kids.
No, but it did eat the person who's in Modern Family. I forget. I think his name is Jesse Tyler Ferguson is the actor's name. The guy who was up in the tree and said, bears can't climb trees. And he was like, yes, they can. And he just ran right up the tree and ripped
him
to
shreds. Pretty much everybody came to a bad end except for
the baby faces, the good guys.
Except for the mother and the two kids, one of which was hers. And Ice Cube's kid didn't get eaten.
That's right.
And I forget the actor who played Ray Liotta's kid, but he didn't get eaten either, and nor did the little dog.
And the cop didn't get eaten, correct? He got shot. The cop that went down to investigate, the Ice Cube's kid killed him with...
Yeah, same, you know, tomato, tomato.
All right, number five, Sheriff Hank Keough, played by Brendan Gleeson in the movie Lake Placid. Did you see Lake Placid?
No, tell me what happened.
You never saw Lake Placid, the two giant crocodiles in the lake that Betty White's character was feeding and keeping them alive? And
I like that Betty White was in it.
Yeah, Bridget Fonda's in it. Bill Pullman's in it. It's a very loaded cast.
So they killed the crocodiles.
They killed one of the crocodiles.
What about the other one?
Three and four and five. They take one of them to some research facility in Maine to see why the hell this crocodile is so big. But then at the end, Betty White's character again starts feeding all these baby crocodiles. And I think it's just Betty White's
fault.
You
watched Succession, right?
I did not, no.
See, we should be talking about Succession. Okay, what's number four?
Number four, Danny Rich, played by Ice Cube in the movie Anaconda.
Oh, I saw Anaconda, but it was so bad I have no recollection of
it. But isn't it amazing how loaded that cast is? John Voight played the lead.
That's right. And
Owen Wilson had a part in
Owen
it, too,
Wilson,
a small
that's right.
part. Ice Cube was very famous during the time. Jennifer Lopez was in the movie as
you
the
You know what other
lead?
Movie was like that was Congo.
Never saw Congo.
Had like an all-star cast, but I can't name any of them right now because, again, the movie was so bad.
Yeah, it's crazy how a movie with that starts.
So they killed
the
snake?
Yeah, Ice Cube killed the snake.
How?
He torched it, and then in a classic horror movie fashion, they thought it was dead, right? It fell to the bottom of the lake, and then it jumps up through the deck, and he has to kill it with an axe. He puts it right through its brain, and then he says, see ya, bitch, and it falls right down to the bottom
of the lake. Ice Cube says that.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Number three, Dr. Ross Jennings, played by Jeff Daniels in the movie Arachnophobia.
Never saw it.
I have a bit of arachnophobia, too. In
Do
real
you
life.
Really?
Don't like spiders, so this movie freaks me out a lot.
Michael Schenker wrote a song called Arachnophobia.
The plot is...
I want my money back, arachnophobiac. It's mostly really good guitar.
A prehistoric South American spider ends up in a coffin that is shipped back to America. And then invasive species.
Because that happens all the time.
100%. Takes over a barn. One bite kills you. Nests inside of you. Eats your insides. Crawls all about you. Jeff Daniels takes care of it, though, with a flamethrower that he made with, like, a bottle of Axe body spray and a lighter. Just torch that thing. Just torch that spider right to death.
With a bottle of Axe body spray?
Kind of like that. Like,
How
just
big
some
was the
aerosol.
Spider?
It was pretty big. Like, probably the size of your fist.
Okay, but not, like, as big as
and
people.
Fast. No. It wasn't like those weird movies like Eight-Legged Freaks where they mutated to be, like, the size of skyscrapers.
You watch some awful movies. What's number two?
Number two, Valentine McKee, Kevin Costner, or Kevin Bacon, excuse me, in the movie Tremors.
I never saw Tremors.
Never saw Tremors.
This is the worst five guys ever.
You don't like science fiction, do you? I should just avoid science fiction movies.
I just don't like these movies. I like Kevin Bacon, though.
Tremors is a fun movie. Like, it's a campy...
He killed Denise Richards in Wild Things. Was that anything like that?
Yeah, it's exactly like that. I'm pretty sure that the giant worm is just like Denise Richards in Wild
Things.
Let's
just get to number one, because I know what number one is.
Chief Brody.
Absolutely.
Roy Scheider in Jaws. Right. Smile, you son of a...
And then he kills the shark in another shark in Jaws 2.
Jaws 2, right.
Because he
electrocutes it to death.
Yeah, he goads him into chopping an electrical cable.
Yes, Chief Brody is the absolute goat when it comes to killing creatures who are trying to attack and cause havoc to the public. You should watch Tremors, though. It's a campy, goofy movie that, and you like Kevin Bacon.
Well,
I think you'd like it.
I love Jaws. I watch Jaws over and over again.
Jaws is one of my favorite movies of all time. Not just like horror, monster, whatever movie. Just it's such a great movie.
One of the best lines in the movies when it all clears up and Richard Dreyfuss comes up in the scuba suit and he looks around and says, real exaggeratedly, Quint. And Sheriff Brody says, no.
No.
That was really tremendous.
You are right, though. A little pop there when Dreyfuss pops out of the water at the very end.
And Brody starts laughing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that movie from beginning to end. And, like, Jaws 2 wasn't as good, but it was good.
Yes, agreed. But then it starts to get a little bit far-fetched when it goes to the 3D one. Jaws 3D.
Well, wasn't there one where...
And then there was one with Dennis Quaid, I think, right?
Didn't they try to put forth the notion that a member of the shark's family came back for revenge? Was that 3?
I think it was either 3D or 4. Like, the son of Chief Brody and the wife are at some, like, amusement park or something, and the shark is after them for revenge. Like, swims miles to get to them, to hunt them down.
And is Sheriff Brody dead at that point?
Yeah, Sheriff Brody's not in the movie.
How'd he get killed?
I don't know if they ever explain it. I really stopped watching after Jaws 2.
I hope he got eaten by a shark anyway.
That's the most poetic way for him to die, for sure.
What if he, like, fell down steps or something, like, really pedestrian?
The best part is Quint, whoever plays Quint in that movie. You know the USS Indianapolis speech he gives?
Whoever plays Quint in which movie?
In Jaws, the actor's name.
It's Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw. There you go. Thank you.
How can you not know that?
Because I'm like 28 years old. That's why you're here for me.
Is that his name, Robert Shaw?
I think it is. Robert Shaw. That sounds right.
Look that up. Look that up on your phone, because if I forgot that, we should just wrap up the podcast and fire me.
The speech that he gives about the USS Indianapolis, he was so fall over drunk when they first shot it that they couldn't use any of the takes.
Right.
So he called Spielberg the night of and said, I feel terrible. You need to give me one more shot at this. Next day, comes in, first scene they shoot, nails it, one take. That amazing scene. And it is Richard Shaw.
Robert Shaw. Yeah, that scene where they're drunk is tremendous. I didn't know they were
Show
really drunk.
Show me the way to go home.
Here's to swimming with bow-legged women. Okay, the Pirates are under 500 as we tape this, 26 and 27. Will they be above 500 again this season?
I'm going to say no. It was funny. Last week's podcast.
Above 500. Above.
They're not going to be above 500. The last podcast we taped last week, we said, are they going to be at or above 500 by the next time we tape? And lo and behold, they're below. And I think we both said they'd still be a little bit above. So they were 20-8 in April. They're right now 6-19 in May. If they get swept by the Giants, they'll lose more games in May than they won in April, which is just unbelievable.
I just heard an interview on the way here with Shelty. And he said he doesn't believe in yanking players out in the middle of a game because they make a mistake. Like when Marcano got doubled off second because he ran on the crack of the bat with one out on a fly ball. I think you got to. I think humiliation is a valuable teaching tool. And to dismiss it out of hand when your team is making so many mistakes like that, you know, it's one thing to have faith in your young players. It's another to basically say, obla-dee, obla-da.
And with such a young team, I think that's even more important. Like, you've got three guys that know how to be big leaguers on that team. Kutch, Santana, Reynolds, and I'll throw Rich Hill in there as well. Other than that, they're all young guys, and...
They ain't that young.
You can't...
I don't want to make excuses for Key Brian Hayes. He's 26, and he has two home runs.
Well, I'm talking more about, you know, the Jiwon Bays and the Marcanos and the guys that make so many errors on the base path that just make you want to pull your hair out. Like, those guys need to be shown some discipline, but at least he's consistent. Remember Shelty last year when Rodolfo Castro's phone fell out of his pocket when he was sliding into a base? He kept him, or he let him play the next day, I think.
I could only quote Kevin Costner and Bull Durham. They're kids. Scare them.
Exactly. And without any fear, what's to stop them from thinking that any of these mistakes are as catastrophic as they are?
Well, I don't blame Shelty because, like, for example, that Marcano got doubled off second. You learn to not go with the crack of the bat on less than two odds when you're in T-ball.
That's his little league coach's fault.
Yeah, that's right. I mentioned Hayes.
So frustrating.
Well, I think the most basic problem with the Pirates is, never mind the mistakes we're talking about, Tom, but the two highest paid guys aren't doing enough. Reynolds and Hayes. Reynolds has two home runs since April 7th and since his new contract, and Hayes just stinks.
You dare to suggest that the biggest problem isn't Sherrington won't call up the big prospects that'll obviously come up and hit 350 and save the season?
The two catchers. Things have gone so bad, Tom, people ain't even talking about that.
But you're right about the two highest paid players. Brian Reynolds just went ice cold. And the two home runs he's hit, by the way, since that first week of the season, they've come when the team's up by like 8 runs already. Like, they're just not weighty home runs anyway. They really don't matter at all.
Like Granlund's lone goal for the 100%. Penguins that came when they were up by 4.
No clutch in it whatsoever. So Reynolds has been just massively disappointing since signing that contract. And Hayes' bat ain't ever coming around. You know, we have Parado on the show every once in a while. He says, yo, you know, I see it in batting practice. I'm still one of the few that believes in it. Ain't coming around. There's just no way with that sample size that this kid's all of a sudden going to click and hit 20, 25 home runs like he should.
Why else did the Pirates collapse? Go from 20-18 to 26-27?
It's hard to say anything but just historically bad offense.
20-8. My God, yeah, 26-27.
Historically bad offense. Because really look at the pitching staff. I mean, there's been games where they've blown up, but it's been pretty manageable for what they should have been. Like, I always thought this pitching was going to be the undoing for them. And I think the pitching, at least through May, has held up where they should be a 500 team in this month.
They've had as many good games as bad.
Right. It's the batting. It's the lineup. It's just been abysmal. And the runners in scoring position is just awful. They just get tight butthole every time they go on the plate and there's a guy on second or third.
Is any of this on Shelton, the manager? I mean, he's not a master tactician, but
I don't think he's that good of a manager. It's really head-scratching that they extended him, isn't it, at the beginning of the season?
No, not really, because he's affordable, and they were trying to keep the wave of good PR going.
That's a good point. I just don't think he's a good manager at all, and you have to manage less than ever before in Major League Baseball, especially with the universal DH. Like, he doesn't have to make really tough decisions about, do I have to sacrifice my starting pitcher who's going well here to get some offense potentially in the sixth inning, or do I let my starter ride and put him up to the plate? Like, decisions are taken out of his hand now with the new rules, and I just don't see it.
Oh, anybody could manage in the major leagues.
I think so, too.
Anybody. And it's simple. It's by rote.
Right. And he seems to make the bad decision a lot more often than the good one.
But do you watch Ted Lasso?
Yeah, love it. Seen them all.
I just started. I'm on episode 3. Yeah, I finally started. I'm on episode 3. I had to have something now that Succession's over. And I, you know, finished Tulsa King, all those, you know, Yellowstone.
Wow, you worked through Tulsa King fast.
Yeah. 1923, the Yellowstone knockoff.
Okay, yeah.
But, okay, it's a little too preachy, and I see that already 3 episodes in. Like, we have to worry about his wife and his kid on, you know, in America, and they're separated or whatever, stuff like that. I'll tell you who I didn't know was in it, though, that's already the star to me. A, because she's hot. B, because she's a great actress, Juno Temple.
She plays Keeley, right?
Keeley, right.
Yeah, Keeley is an incredible character. It'll continue to be preachy, so just keep that, you know, in the back of your mind whenever you're going through it. But, man, there are just some one-liners in that show that are laugh out loud.
Oh, there already are that.
I know. And he's just such a genuinely great character. And the whole ensemble grows on you. Like, the Coach Beard, all those side characters just grow on you.
Nate. You can already tell
Nate's
going to
grow on you, yeah.
But I like the one when he put the suggestion box in the second episode, and you're a wanker, then there was something else, and his assistant coach, boy, it's a good thing these are anonymous. He goes, no, Roy Stein, that one.
Roy Kent is my favorite
Who's
character
based on
in the
Roy
entire
Keane,
show.
Okay. The Manchester United guy who I hate.
It's interesting then that they made his team Chelsea in the show when they based him off
his ex-team.
His ex-team, yeah.
Right,
the team that he was famous for. But Roy Kent's going to be your favorite character. He's marvelous.
I don't know. He's a little too much like Roy Keane. Kenny Pickett got his car and playbook stolen, and the thief left his car that he drove to. It was an auto dealership. He left it there so they could trace the plate. How hilarious is that?
That's an all-time bad criminal right there. I mean, it makes me think, like, the people that decide to commit crimes like that just have to have so few brain cells to begin with anyway to have a move like that.
Or they want to get caught.
That's like 101 stuff. Why would you want to get caught?
You know what? What's better, homeless or jail?
That's a very good point.
Although this guy did have a car. He could at least sleep in a car.
I don't know if he's exactly homeless. Kenny Pickett's got to keep the playbook on him at all times, though, right?
Think so?
Strike one for him, I think, in the offseason.
It doesn't matter.
Serious, that. Mark.
It was more funny than anything to me.
I'm just kidding.
Think, like, Baltimore or Cincinnati needs that playbook to figure out the Steelers' offense? Because I sure don't.
Hell no. They know what Matt Canada's cooking up for them. He's got as much IQ as the guy who stole Kenny's car and left the car at the dealership.
You heard what I said earlier about the Steelers are trying to figure out a way to get Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris on the field at the same time. Boy, it's a shame Franco passed away because they could just use Franco and Rocky. I can't think of one method where having two running backs on the field at the same time would be beneficial unless one of those is a great receiver.
Yes.
And Najee's kind of an okay receiver, but he ain't Lev Bell.
Nope.
I just don't get it. It shows how out of touch they are with what offense is in today's NFL.
I'm all for, you know, having a split of the carries, maybe like a 65-35 kind of thing, if you want to give Warren a little bit more run.
I'm all for taking most of their carries and throwing instead.
That is the way that the NFL would want you to play, but the Steelers are going to zig, apparently, while everybody else is zagging. And
yeah, that's not going to work.
Well,
I mean,
this is a zig way too far in that direction.
As I've said repeatedly, the way they approach offense, and for that matter, you know, elite defense, that'll beat bummy teams with bummy quarterbacks, as I've repeatedly said.
Like 17-13, like those type of scores, just squeak out games.
Yeah, like more like 28-24 in today's NFL, but yeah.
I don't know.
Check your Twitter. See if they hired Dubichet. Because that has to be coming soon, doesn't it?
I feel like it has to be today. I mean, at some point, if you're the Penguins, don't you have to go back to him and be like, look, dude, we gave you the weekend.
It'll be in the middle of the show and ruin everything I prepared, my afternoon show.
Still no Dubus.
Ah. I don't blame Pickett. It's like, dude, where's my playbook? They should have, you know, what was that, Stifler and Ashton Kutcher?
Yeah.
They should do a sequel, Dude, Where's My Playbook? What was your take on we rarely talk NBA. I think you watch more than I do. Could it be any more embarrassing for the Celtics that they got slaughtered three straight games by the 8 seed, then rallied to get to game 7, then the 8 seed beat them on their home court to eliminate them?
Handedly, too.
Yeah.
Like, kicked their ass in game 7 on their home.
Especially down
court.
The stretch. I mean, Tatum got hurt early, but that's too bad.
How do you let that happen? Like, how do you get on that big of a roll? And you're right, it is too bad, because even with Jason Tatum hurt and still playing through it, the Celtics are a much better team than the Miami Heat were this year. So, like, I don't know how you can be so inconsistent like they are. I honestly think it has to come back to coaching, because their original coach, Ime Udoka, was the guy who cheated on his wife and then got ousted.
And they were absurd for getting rid of him for that. If he was a good coach, if he was their guy, that was just stupid.
Took him to the finals last year, took the Golden State Warriors to game 6. Then they dismiss him. They bring in Joe Mazzulla, a West Virginia guy. Has not had any experience as a head coach before, and I think was just completely overwhelmed, and that's why you have the inconsistencies, especially going up against Spoelstra. That's a Hall of Fame coach on the other sideline.
Yeah, that's true. I said that before game 7. I would bet on Spoelstra over Mazzulla.
Massive mismatch. The biggest mismatch in the series was coaching.
Although I do like Mazzulla's obsession with watching The Town.
4 times a day? Is that what he says?
Right.
Or
exactly.
A week, I think.
4 times a week. Now, what about the NHL? The finals are set. And here's my big story there, Tom. If Eichel wins the Stanley Cup in his first playoff and eliminates McDavid on route, that makes McDavid look like the biggest schmuck in the world and really puts pressure on him moving forward, especially if that narrative is furthered by the media. I'm not sure the Canadian media will do that, though, because it's also an American not doing a Canadian.
I think he's going to do it, too. I think I'm leaning towards Vegas to win the series. Part of it feels like Bob's going to be a pumpkin at some point, right? Turn back to a pumpkin. He's not going to be.
Yeah, but look at Vegas'
Sterling,
goaltender. I'm still not even
Hill,
sure
yeah.
how to spell his name.
Yeah, and they have a Kachuk, so that's always very dangerous when you're going up against a Kachuk.
Well, and the Florida ain't played for 10 days. I think that's an advantage for Vegas, actually, in the first game, because they'll be more in sync.
And in a weird way, too, like Vegas.
But after that, I think it favors Florida.
You know, Vegas drops those 2 games to get to game 6 against Dallas. They had
right.
that moment where they were like, all right, enough's enough. Like, we got to kick their ass and get to the Stanley Cup. Like, the BS stops now.
Well,
they did last night.
I'm picking Vegas.
Them. I'm picking Vegas, too.
I mean, but I think it's going to be a long, really bad series because these playoffs have been awful.
Awful. You've referenced the grown men so many times that Vegas has on the defense.
The adults. They have six, Bucci said that. They have 6 adults on defense.
That's what you need to handle a Kachuk.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. They are equipped more than most teams
to handle
Kachuk.
Kachuk. Yep, 100%.
Now, okay, let's close it with good cop, bad cop.
All right, today's good cop, bad cop is Blizzard Flavors from Dairy Queen.
Oh,
I knew you'd like this one.
I know.
This is better than Five Guys.
Never mind
guys.
Those crappy movies you watch.
You should still watch Tremors. All right, good cop.
I'd rather have Tremors.
Good cop, I got Oreo. Love the Oreo Blizzard. Cookies and cream Blizzard, whatever you want to call it. My favorite.
It is my favorite, but there's a new one they have, and I can't remember what it is. It's a one-time, one-summer-only thing.
They can do the specialty ones, like only for the month.
But I forget what it is. It's like salted caramel.
Ooh,
oh, no, I know what it is. It's the Oreo Brookie. The Brookie, half brownie, half cookie, Oreo Brookie.
That sounds delightful.
It is tremendous.
Oh, my God. That's the perfect. That's a match made in heaven right there, Oreos and brownies.
But in terms of general consumption, like year to year.
Always on the menu.
Oreo, yeah. The Oreo's the go-to, for sure.
All right, my back cut might be a little controversial, because I like this candy, but not in my ice cream and not in my Blizzard.
Go ahead.
M&M's. A little too crunchy for me when I'm eating the Blizzard.
When you're eating ice cream, it has a sharp, stingy bite to it.
You got it.
But I still get it. I still would eat it.
I feel you there. I just would choose so many more before I got to it. Again, I love M&M's. Like, you give me a bag of M&M's, they're gone before you even turn around. But I can't do it in that ice cream. You're right. And sometimes I feel like I get a full M&M that just slides down my throat, and I don't like that feeling.
If I thought anybody listened to this show in Conneaut Lake, I would do the Zatzik's Golden Dawn top three donut list for my top three list. And those would be... cream-filled Oreo.
Yes.
Non-cream-filled Oreo. And chocolate icing dipped in M&M's.
I'm assuming this is the type of donut place where those things are coming out fresh.
Yes.
Right? The icing is like melting on the donut.
And some of them, the flavors go so fast. Like I was there 3 days.
They limit the flavors. We're out. We're not making more.
I went Saturday, Sunday, Monday, okay?
Yeah.
And the first day I got there, all they had left was M&M's white icing. Among the ones I prefer. It was still really good.
Not bad.
But so I got M&M's white icing and a Long John, the cream-filled cruller.
Okay.
White cream. Not Boston cream, but white cream. But I said to the lady, I go, boy, I can't believe you're out of the Oreo. She goes, oh, do you want some tomorrow? She reserved them for me. Because I'm a big celebrity
anywhere.
Not least Conneaut Lake. That's Tom Offerman. I'm Mark Madden. Thank you for listening to the Bet Rivers Podcast Network. Bet now from anywhere.
Catch new episodes of Mark Madden Unfiltered every week. Available on the Bet Rivers Network, BetRivers.com, and wherever you find your podcasts.